I don't know why I look so red. Weird.
Red light filter, hit the infrared jet sauna this
Ha!
morning.
Weird. Maybe it's my, I have a screen on in front of me, just to kind of lighten it up in here. Maybe it might be that. But I look like I'm a lobster. That's crazy. It's also a different computer. Wild. Rob, I'm gonna designate.
Is that your home gym that you recorded the little video of earlier?
Which one?
You said you recorded, put a little video in the chat about the call tonight, and you just finished a back session. Oh, an epic setup.
Yeah,
Just from what I
man.
can see in the background as you were turning around.
Are you on Instagram?
Yeah.
What's your handle?
I have no idea. That's how much I'm on Instagram. I have it for funny reels people send me.
I always put my workouts up there and you can see me working out. I have it in my garage. It used to actually be in here before COVID, and then the wife got pregnant with our second, and so I started kind of like building something up. And then it just kind of got outlandish because it's an addiction to buy home gym equipment, apparently. And then I just moved to the garage.
Totally. All right, I'll try to find. What are you on Insta? I got Coach Chris as well.
On Instagram?
Yeah.
It's at Steve Logics with an X.
Gotcha.
Got me? I'm gonna designate you, Robert, as my official crappy internet mitigator. If you see me kind of like cutting in and out, just literally pop in and just tell me that that you're losing me, okay?
Easy.
It seems for some reason I'm working right now. It's been really weird. They started doing lucky me. They started actually digging up about 1 kilometer, not even maybe 1/2 kilometer that way, to put it in like a highway. So it's just been absolute rubbish. I don't know what's going on in the area. They must have done something with the wiring or something like that to, screw things up. But we have been having a crap time lately. So if I do lose you guys, please just bear with me, or just pipe up. Don't be shy and just say we can't hear you, okay? There's a lot to hopefully go over today. So what we'll do is I'm hoping some more people get in. I'm gonna right now just message the group. One last time, just before I start. But if you guys can, do you guys have anything that was really cool that went on this week? Any wins you'd like to share?
Well, Coach Andrew's got me back on. We did like a real body recomposition phase, and I've still been in sort of a 3-day-a-week all body circuits. And this is the first week of a new program where I'm getting back to more of a upper body, lower body split. So I had sort of some first, like just full upper body sessions that I've had in probably a year, and same like a full leg, just leg session. So it's kind of it's fun to get back into that hypertrophy stage.
Awesome, man. What makes it fun?
I just get like you kind of get a different focus, right? You just get a that ability to absolutely blast like one, just hit lower body and walk out of the gym going, oh man, I'm dead. You kind of get that different, but then you can go back the next day and go, oh, I took like shoulders and chest today. Like it's a fun day. I don't have to do anything with my lower body.
Absolutely. Do you guys find that? Do you guys like lose or gain motivation across your workouts, or is it pretty steady, or what do you guys find?
Yeah, I'll find that certain workouts, certain groups are definitely a little more motivating. Groups maybe like back and stuff that I find I'm a little bit better at. I enjoy more naturally, I guess, right?
100%. So like that's something I'm hoping to get into tonight as well, because I'm a firm believer that everything's actually more of a system than we want to believe. I'd like to believe we all kind of like certain things, but I've never seen somebody like something they're bad at. Just doesn't seem like it's human to me, right? We kind of all hate things that either cause us pain, or we all hate things that we don't see progress in, right? And then we all love things that feel good. We all love things that, work really well.
I think the change is as good as a holiday. And I think one thing I've enjoyed about having more consistent programming with Andrew is like I was definitely starting to taper doing the same workouts. But you don't want to just chop and change willy-nilly. But no, someone's saying like, no, you need to just hit this same program for another couple of weeks. But then we're changing it up. So having a new program, new exercises to go through again, my brain's back engaged, you stop. You run the risk of going through the motions a bit when you're just doing the same program for a long time. But, also, if I was just doing my own training before, I'd probably just chop and change too much. It's kind of good to have someone outside saying, no, just hit this for another month. But then there's a change and I've got that burst of energy this week. I'm like, oh, new exercises, new muscle groups, change of structure. Like my brain's fully engaged again.
You know what? Like I've been around this for a little while and I've noticed like both sides, right? Like on one side, I've found that you can get a lot of motivation, like you just said, from program change because it plays to the side of us that we're like, we're always at play. Have you guys read that book? I'm not sure what the book's actually even called. Maybe one of you guys can pop in if you've known about it. But it's basically talking about how humans, essentially all we should really be doing is just playing. You ever heard about that? Like everything is at its fundamental point, just play. It's just that play as an adult doesn't look like, well, like here, I'm gonna show you. So this is, here, I'm gonna have to unplug this thing. Hold on a second. This is play to my kid right now. Look at that. Isn't that cool? It's like the Lego Arkham Asylum. He just built that the other day. He's so proud of himself. That's play to my kids right now, right? If I did that, I'd get fired. Like that's just the way it works. Like we don't get away with that kind of stuff anymore. But play for us, sorry, I'm just gonna plug this laptop back in there so I can keep reception. Play for us is more like experimentation, right? Actually seeing if things can evolve and if we can kind of challenge our brains, right? You guys still got me? Right? Everything's all good? Yeah. There's a whole book about it and talking about that. And that's why, like, if you actually look at certain programming methods, you guys ever heard of the conjugate method from West Side Barbell? No? Nobody? Like, so conjugate method is very much like that. It was from Louis Simmons, and he was talking originally about how his methodology behind it, or his mentality rather, was around the fact that he had these guys were essentially ex-cons, right? Fun fact about West Side Barbell is you could not work out there unless you could bench press, squat, and deadlift 245. Not because it was an ego competition, but because they literally were a hole in the wall gym. And their barbell, the only one they had in there when they first started, had 100-pound plates welded onto the sides. So you physically could not start unless you could lift that weight. It's like, sucks to be you, apparently, right? It's like, that's why they're ex-cons, just, really, really strong. So what Louis found is like these guys are so strong that he had to find ways to challenge them that were unlike conventional methods, right? Where it's just progression, 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 because either you'd be limiting by injury, right? Or their cardiovascular systems just couldn't adapt. Meaning like if you progress the weight, what would happen is these big guys would eventually get hurt, right? Because it's too much weight, too much, right? If you do the reps, then eventually they're just too big, they can't keep up cardiovascularly, right? So how do you progress these athletes? And there's obviously more science now, but how do you progress these athletes when there's obviously some very, very real considerations to be had, right? So what conjugate was like very is exercise novelty and variance all the time. Like one week you go in and you do like weight release or squats, and the next week you do like camber bar squats, the next day you do pause squats, the next day you do front squat. Like every single week was a different kind of thing. Now that might throw things for a loop with a person who's brand new. Because what do you guys notice when you get a new program? First 2 weeks is pretty much like, what are my weights figuring this thing out, right? And so that's the problem. It's like when you have guys who are new, and I shouldn't even say new, because it's not really a novice problem, but just even if the exercise selection's new or if it has anything to do. Oh, Mike, I just got a second version of you, buddy. Are you gonna enter the Twilight Zone here?
Yeah, I just want to get on the laptop, man. So sign me up.
Okay. Yeah, just make sure you're muted.
Yeah.
If you guys can hear my dog barking in the background, she's this border collie I have. She's like 6 months old and she just howls. It's so sad because she gets left home when the family takes the other dogs on a walk and she just feels so sad and pathetic. And all you hear is howling. She's like, oh, all night. Anyways, so that's what the whole thing's about. It's like exercise novelty so you can steer people away from injury using variance as a stimulant, right? And so it was actually kind of effective because it exposed weaknesses. But regardless, that's the whole thing. It's like you change exercise programs too quickly and you don't get the adaptation, right? But if you change it, then you get novelty. So if there's bonuses and obviously downsides too as well. John, welcome, buddy. I'm coming. We're kind of buying some time as people kind of trail in. How's training going this week?
It's good, but I'm in the elevator. I'm on my way to work.
It's okay. We'll both have bad reception together. Paul, how are you doing, man?
Perfectly fine.
How are things on your end? How's training?
Pretty good. Going to be going into a training change, I think. Coach Andrew wants to get on a call to talk about goals again before anything changes, though.
Awesome. And what are the goals right now?
Right now, working towards 1,000 pound club. I'm
Oh,
just
well.
trying to get stronger there.
Are you just gonna do like I'm just gonna make sure I lift as much as possible every single lift, or are you gonna capitalize on one lift that you're really good at? What are you gonna do?
Not too sure at this point. Still just trying to get stronger and work towards that as a whole, I guess.
Yeah, what's your best lift?
Trap bar deadlift, 245.
Good for you, man. Awesome. Feeling confident?
With that one, yeah.
Yeah, good. Good. You know what? Maybe even today can be a good way of looking at things, because I think that a lot of us can get in our heads about like what motions are bad for us, right? And then we sometimes get too, I don't want, like, addicted is a strong word, but we get in the mindset where we consistently almost like what's the word? Ruminate on the thought that we can't make progression because it's just a bad lift, right? When all these lifts are just a sum of their individual pieces, which is just like mobility, stability, and then muscles, right? Make sense? Okay. So guys, I wanted to talk to you guys about back training. So there's a lot of stuff. I don't want to overload you with like too much science, but there is some stuff to consider. So I'm gonna share the screen in a couple of seconds. If nobody else has any wins you'd like to celebrate, because I do want to hear about it. I know that in the beginning, if you guys are on the weekly calls, it's pretty much something we always do. And I know that it can come across sometimes almost like sharing wins can be awkward, but I think there's a couple of reasons I like to hear it. First off, a lot of people in like the client aspect, like you guys, seeing each other win, it's pretty awesome. Like it actually really is cool seeing that other people can do this, because I find that on the other side of it, when people fail, they tend to think that their failures are their own and that they're the only one doing it. Do you ever feel like that? Like what you're going through is unique to you, but then the truth is we're all humans. We're all part of this club of humans that we all fail, we all struggle, right? So when you see people win, then it's like, oh, that's just they're doing it, so I can do it too, right? That's just the way it works. Like you can get results, I can get results. And that's the cool thing with the process. And that's not unlike how I kind of try to write things out for the back training talk we're gonna have tonight, so that you guys can understand. If you want to develop like just a monstrous back, like certain motions in your training, and then getting really, really highly proficient with a couple key items, and then just progressing from there. Okay, so before I get into the slideshow thingy there, it won't be too crazy, but yeah, before I get into that, do you guys feel that you connect really well, or do you guys struggle with your back training? Show of hands, struggle, and then thumbs up, thumbs down. Iffy, Shaw's, what's your name, buddy?
Mike.
Mike,
Yes, I was
Mike.
just
So,
wondering
what
how
do you
to.
what's going on?
It depends. It depends on the motion. If I'm trying to isolate my lats,
Okay.
I have a hard time trying to remember to, almost bring my elbows down instead of turning it into a row and bringing in my mid back and upper back and traps kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yep. Okay. Anybody else? Is lats a pretty commonplace thing amongst the group, you think? Like I know Mike, when we first started, like Mike's movements have changed completely. But when they first started, Mike, like there was a little bit connection thing there, right? Like learning that movement of like driving down versus pulling. It's a very different thing, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. Massive difference. Like instead of feeling it in your center back, it's way more lats.
Yep. Very different. And a lot of this stuff, and again, I could talk about this for hours. We could literally go camping, guys, over a weekend. I could probably never stop talking about how to train different muscles, because there's different ways of thinking about it. There's different nuances. There's just a million different things. We don't have to get complicated. There's a couple of key points. That's what I was trying to go over today. But when it comes down to this, remember that there's always this underguiding or like this undercurrent of just physics, right? And that's what it all comes down to is just physics. I used an analogy a couple times ago when I ran the slide, and I told people when you raise your arm out, right? If you all raise your arm out, just do this for me. Super point, right? Like what muscle is loaded? Your delt. Yeah, exactly. Did you guys have to cue it? Did you have to think about it? No, right? Physics just said delt has to work. Why? Well, because it has to support my arm. Like my arm has to stay in space. So no matter how much you try to cue it, your calf won't work. To my point? Okay, it's stupid. It's a stupid analogy for a reason, to kind of bring light to the fact that we can cue, and sometimes people get too obsessive with trying to chase that, and they forget that physics is kind of at hand as long as we're playing with gravity, right? And for most, unless you're using certain like weird machines, I know like Bowflex has had like a machine that had technology with like bands and stuff, and bands obviously don't work based on gravity, right? But they had one really cool machine that was actually based on the the technology they use for like training in low gravity and whatnot. This band reversal technology, you heard of that? It's really cool. And like you could just pull, and so that would be a different thing because that would have nothing to do with it. But yeah, in regards to what we're doing here though, physics is going to dictate things. And it's especially important for back training because it's angles. It's angles, and then basically getting into positions that facilitate certain contractions, like you were just saying, Mike. Okay. So I'm gonna show you my screen. Just bear with me one second, guys. Because not only am I bad at the internet, but I'm also computer retarded. You guys have a lot of fun with me tonight. Okay, can you guys see this? Yeah. Oh, of course that thing's gonna pop up. Of course. Hold on. Okay. Ew. How do I do this? Come on. Of course, it's not going to do that, is it? Do you guys know how to work PowerPoint? Do you understand why I would not be doing that right now?
There's normally a present, see down the bottom, near little magnifying slider.
I don't see it. Oh, down here?
Bottom right, there's a little magnifying slider. And if you go one left of that, there's a little thing that kind of looks like a weird computer. That one more to the right. One
Okay.
more to the right. That should be present, I think.
Ah,
So.
oh, look at you. You're a genius. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. See, this is why I elected you. You're my saving grace already, buddy. Okay, so back training. Look at this. See the high tech? I'm already pre I'm working, you guys. Okay, good. So, oh, I'm failing. I press right and it's not going to work. What do I do now?
Mouse click, space bar,
Is it
something
space
should
bar?
go.
No, it's not doing anything. Weird. Oh. Okay, so there you go. Okay, I can't see this thing. I'm trying to figure out why or how I can get. Man, I can't win this thing. No matter what I do, there's something in the way. I'm going to try to figure out how to do this so that you guys don't have to deal with me being a pain in the butt because for some reason I can't get around it. Hold on, guys. I'm sorry for the problems here. Can you guys see this screen?
We can see the posture and stability first screen.
Perfect. Okay, so I can't see you. Okay, so I'm just going to present as if they're not even here. Okay, so a couple of things. When we're working on back, one of the things that people—I shouldn't say one of the things—I would say this is probably the most common fault I see is nobody pays attention to the stability of the spine. So you guys have heard Ben talk about like stability probably on end. The reason why is because we have two joints in the muscle. Can you guys see me as well? Yes. Yeah. Okay. So like when we have two spots in the muscle, we have an origin and insertion, right? And when it comes down to putting tension through muscles, we have to have that tension at both the stability, sorry, at the origin, so we can put tension on and load the muscle, right? So imagine I have like a rope. Can you guys see me? I can't hear you, actually. I can't see you. So just let me know you can see me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So imagine that this is a muscle. See this? This is all flimsy, right? So this is the origin. This is the insertion, right? What we want to do is you want to be able to put tension on a muscle. Okay. What happens here is that when people have a low stability in origin, when you pull, it comes with it, right? And that's the issue we have. When we don't move properly, the origin is unstable. So that becomes problematic because then when it comes down to training, things get a little bit complicated. Okay. So when it comes down to the spine, if you guys can see right down here, if you guys can see my mouse, I'm pointing towards this picture with the anatomy there. And take a look at all those muscles just for 2 seconds and just look at all the different muscles that insert at the spine. Okay, so we got the traps, we got like the freaking lats, we got the different erectors, and we have parts of the oblique, we have the serratus, like we have a lot of different like the erectors, they all kind of originate there. Do you guys see that? Yeah. Rob, yeah, good.
Yep, we're all nodding
Okay.
along.
Yeah, so in this picture right here, the reason why that matters is because when we have that as a crucial thing, imagine if you will, that when we start like having an issue with trying to load a muscle and the spine's unstable, then you'd be like reaching and you'd be kind of like bowing or you'd be kind of moving the spine rather than putting tension through it. I'm gonna try to figure out how to get you guys back on. Because I can't see you, and it's really distracting. Just one second. I'm gonna figure out how to see you. This is driving me bonkers. I'm sorry again, this guy's. I guess I'm just gonna keep on doing this. No, not gonna work. So I'm just gonna figure it out. Okay, so when we're trying to pick exercises, yeah, we're trying to take in the first phase, we're trying to really focus on making sure that we train that stability, right? So if we're looking at everything like it's a nail, then we become a hammer with everything, right? And what that means is like if you look at training spinal stability versus training muscles, then it becomes an issue of like exercise selection versus efficacy. So if we look at a deadlift, the deadlift can be like a compound motion that's like, yeah, we're doing this to beat up our back. Or we can be like, hey, this is for spinal stability. Does that make sense, guys? Same thing with bent over barbell row. Like a bent over barbell row for me can be a great position to kind of put you into this plane of motion where you're now responsible for moving through your scapula while training spinal stability, right? Whereas chest supported row, you don't really have to worry about this. Does that make sense, Rob? Yeah, good. Okay. So like if we're thinking about that, then it starts segregating motions for us, which or separating the intention of it, right? Does that make sense, guys?
Yes, sir.
So if we look at something like a one-arm dumbbell row versus like a one-arm, again, machine row, we get the unique opportunity to train spinal or anti-rotation in the spine. That's also really important. These things become really important later on because if yeah, I'm sure you guys have seen it, like a one-arm chest supported machine row, people rowing and their whole body's rotating through that position, right? That becomes an issue because how do we even know we're putting tension on the muscle? It comes back to that analogy here where like we have this muscle right here and the person doesn't know it, but this is slack and they're moving because this is the spine, the origin of the muscle trying to train. And every single time the person moves the arm, the spine goes with it. Then how do we even know we're training that lat? How do we even know that we're training that rhomboid or that trap? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So then we train something like a one-arm dumbbell row to try to bring that intention to our training so that we can there like move into other things later on that can be really beneficial. So once we understand movement and stability, right, then we try to get into things that can really help with recruitment. Okay. So I've listed a couple exercise ideas here for you. Things like the one-arm kneeling high cable row. My reasoning behind that is just to make sure that you have to individually learn how to stabilize and stack your pelvis and then uniquely drive through the lat. Mike will be familiar with that one. A head supported dumbbell row. If you guys ever done that, it's an exercise where you're kind of bent over in a one arm dumbbell row position, but your head is supported against something. And the intention there, since you're limiting cervical extension, we're having to move through the upper back like that without extension, right? So now we're in that motion. We're limiting extension versus a rhomboid or scapular movement, okay? And then something like a hyperextension, where we're trying to learn how to move the erectors, buddy, close the door. We're learning how to move the erectors without moving like anything else. So one position is individually isolated. Does that make sense? So do you guys know what the hyperextension is? The horizontal one where like basically you're in a like a plank position at the contraction. Does that make sense to you guys? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the horizontal hyper, they actually use this as a low back test. And I'm not sure what's the testing, but there's one testing protocol where doing like I think it's like a minute or 2 minutes, something like that, actually shows a certain standard of low back health. And they use this across the world. So if you ever want to test that, you can actually do that. I think Fudge has the protocol for that, but it literally is a low back health test. So spinal erectors, right? And if a person has no ability to do that motion, then we would probably try to fix that through certain diaphragmatic breath work kind of integrations or posture, possibly glute stuff like that, trying to make sure the pelvis is stable, because then we're going to go downstream as well and say like, is this an issue with the pelvis? Because again, the spine erectors are going to fasten in around that area, or is it actually a problem with like spinal stability at like a diaphragmatic level? So like we can go there as well. Then lastly, then here's the catch. I want you guys to kind of like, I know there's a lot of information there, but I want you guys to kind of imagine that that's really complicated, right? As if it wasn't already. And then now look at this bottom thing, right? So output, frontal lat pull down, single arm sagittal pull, low machine row, deadlifts, wide rows, Kelso shrugs, all those exercises, that's like right here in this bottom part. This is like 90% of what I see people train. That's the problem. Like, though, that bottom list there, that's like 90% of what people do in the gym, and they're doing that first. And that's the issue we have here, is like people haven't even taken care of the first stuff and they're doing the last stuff first. So why do you think that's an issue, guys? Take off your mics and tell me. Because from everything I just kind of like threw at you in terms of the complexity of like spinal stability, anti-rotation, understanding movement, and then you have like these output motions. What do we know about output? It's about driving adaptation and trying to actually build on muscle, right? So what's the issue with going to those motions first? Anybody
I'm
want to take
guessing you could
that?
be overloading without the stability to do it safely, or you might not be activating, so you might just be recruiting other,
I love that. Thank you. Love that, man. So this is actually really cool. So activation. I was playing around with some research yesterday, and I'm sure you guys have heard of Ben. If you follow Ben online, if you've heard him talk, he said before stability governs contractility, right? Have you heard him say that? Yeah. So this is not only real, but it's more real than you understand. So what ends up happening is you actually do in the central motor unit, like you down regulate the amount of central motor units you can recruit. Okay. So you do lose the amount you connect to. So again, this is one of those things where we're gonna have a runaway topic, but loosely, if I was talking about it, so your bicep, we don't train as an example, just visual, we don't train a muscle. We train myofibrils. Okay. You don't ever go into the gym and train the whole bicep. That doesn't work. You don't go into the gym and train the whole quad. Okay. We train myofibrils, and that's based on recruitment. Okay. Once we understand that we don't grow a muscle, we grow myofibrils, we either split or grow, then everything becomes so much more easy to understand and digest, because then we start looking at things like, okay, so how do we get this adaptation? And you just said right there, if you're not stable, what happens? Well, it means you downregulate motor unit recruitment. You downregulate the amount you can actually recruit in the muscle, right? So that means that if you're trying to develop, let's say, your lat and you're not stable, right? Lat's going to have some pelvic orientation and spinal, sorry, orientation, origins, and then spinal origins as well, right? So if we have an instability at one of those positions, you're going to automatically at the central nervous system level downregulate recruitment. So that means that the amount of lat fibers you're trying to stimulate and tap into, you're not getting it. So no matter how hard you work, it doesn't matter. You will not grow that muscle. That's the key takeaway, okay? I want you guys to visualize this right now, okay? Imagine that you're staring over the top of like a 19, I don't know what the year is. Somebody correct me, you're like a 1960s Barracuda, okay? Something like that. You're staring over the hood and there's a big, big block in it, right? And you know this thing has like pushing 700 to 800 horsepower, right? And the guy's like, I just gotta add more horsepower. And then he's just so blind and he thinks the car needs more horsepower. And you step back and you look and you're like, dude, you don't notice that your tires are bald? You don't notice that? Your tires are bald. They're bald. And he's like, what? And he doesn't even see it because he's just so obsessed with putting more horsepower in it. That's like everybody in the gym. They don't understand. It's not about trying to work harder. Working harder is going to be a byproduct of your stability and then your confidence in the gym because you've done this. Does that make sense? Like, you've been doing this. So you're like, I see results. This is awesome. So now you want to work harder because you're stable and it feels good. Like, when we started this call, I think, I'm not sure if it was you, Rob, but one of you guys said that, like, yeah, like you feel better in the motions that you're good at, right? Yeah, nobody feels better in the motions they suck at. That doesn't make sense. Like, you usually have pain, and then what happens is because the pain's there, we start actually trying to we lean away from those motions, right? It becomes an issue because we actually start avoiding them. So yeah, I'm gonna go back to the presentation. I was just watching so I can talk to you guys. So those motions right there, they all have a specific intention. If we look at like a front, so you guys know what a frontal pull versus a sagittal pull is. Okay, like, so frontal pull down would be like here, pulling down like that, right? Sagittal would be like here, like a row like this, right? So redundancy is something we're gonna get into, but like this is a way to be specific with muscle recruitment. So again, we talk about not training the whole muscle. This is a great example of that, because if we're training sagittal lats, we're gonna get that lat spread area. We're gonna get that part of the lat that pops out here. If we're training frontal positions like here, we're gonna get more of an iliac lat. So you guys know the Christmas tree look on guys? That Christmas tree bring it, that's gonna be more what you're training if you're doing like frontal pull, right? Really important. But exercise redundancy becomes an issue when you start having guys do, they do like in their output phase, it's like, we're going to do a frontal pull, vertical underhand lat pull down. And then they're going to go into a machine and do a single arm machine row if they're able to decide. And then they're going to go to do seated cable rows. And they're going to bend over and you're going to do a one arm dumbbell row. And like, you just did four of the same exercise. There's no point in it. What are you doing? That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, if this was about muscle, if muscles, that fundamental principle of recruitment governs growth based on demand, and that has to do with not being tired, right? Meaning like you have to be obviously at your best to recruit the most amount of those myofibrils we're trying to tap into to load them. Then how does it make sense that you're going to get more results if you're more and more tired as the workout goes on, right? It doesn't make sense. So what we want to lean on later is like frequency and try to be more efficient. That's what eliminating this redundancy does. Okay, let me see if I go there. Okay, so understanding the muscle groups we're working. When it comes to back training, the biggest things we're really working, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, will be spina erectors, lats, rhomboids, traps. Okay, so spina erectors, like what you think is like back thickness, left to right. Not like here left right, but like front to back like that, right? That back thickness. Lats again, think lat spread, and then you got your mid back, your traps, and your rhomboids. And this is one of the more confusing runs, right? Rhomboids have more upward kind of trajectory. If you guys shrug right now, just everybody kind of like bring their back together. You'll notice that if you do this, your shoulders don't go actually back; they kind of go up. You notice that? They kind of go up a little bit. Right? So it's not back and down. If we actually go back and down, if you're really paying attention to it, so shrug back and think down, you'll probably notice that you lift your sternum a smidge at the very, very end of that motion. Right? We shrug back and our sternum comes up. So we actually kind of leverage a little bit of thoracic extension in order to make sure we can do that. Right? So when we're dividing those motions, that's an important distinction because the low row, for example, you guys ever use like a hammer strength low row machine where you go like this? And you pull like that, that would be more like it'd be like rear delts, it'd be traps, upper traps, and then rhomboids, right? Whereas if we're doing like a you ever use like an erg handle like this and done like a lat pull down like this, that's gonna be more lats and mid back, like traps, because the orientation of those fibers is gonna be more in alignment with that. Okay. Now there's a billion pictures you guys can like kind of Google, but if you're ever interested, just type in like trap muscle fibers origin insertion, lat muscle fibers origin insertion. Go Google it. It's kind of cool because when you actually see the muscle fibers, you can actually see like how those muscle fibers kind of align from the origin and the insertion, right? Now it doesn't always work. Like that's something called pination angle. And like when you look at the quads, for example, it doesn't work because there's a lot of like lines in the quads that work. You ever seen quads when they're really, really shredded? You ever seen like Ben's legs? The lines are everywhere on his legs, right? And the quad only does really one thing, which is extend the knee. So it doesn't always work like that. But for the back, it's a good signal to kind of look at how those muscle fibers or like kind of go to their origin, okay? So there are some motions we pick based on key takeaways. So what I was writing here is like if we're thinking about training upper spinal posture and scapular movement, we're thinking traps and rhomboids. So the secondary one of the, I shouldn't say secondary, but a function of the rhomboids and traps, the upper traps, not up here, but more in the mid back when you're tracked, is definitely thoracic extension and that stability there. And then upper arm movement for the lats and then spine erectors, obviously anti-flexion, and then stability of the spine. So if think anti-flexion, when you're doing a deadlift, what's the biggest cue for a deadlift? Anybody just blurted out.
Chest up.
Right, chest up, right? So why do we cue chest up? Because we don't want to then turn into a question mark, right? Like that you ever seen the meme about it's 5 o'clock in your gym now and it shows a bunch of dogs deadlifting with hair. Yeah. So like that's it right there. It's the dog crapping in the woods, and that's like spinal flexion territory, right? With these 17-year-olds. And so like anti-flexion. So that's flexion. This is extension. So the spinal erectors, people, they are a spinal erector. So extension. But when do we do that all the time against load? We don't. We more so resist this. Does that make sense? So if we kind of view it in that opposition, then it makes more sense. We resist extension. Okay, because there's not a lot of positions you're going to go into massive extension with. But once you see resist flexion, then you're like, okay, so what's going on there? Well, what about a barbell back squat? What's it wanting to do? When you're in the bottom of a barbell back squat, what's the bar wanting to do to you? Trying to fold you over, right? So what's your spine doing? It's resisting flexion, right? So spine erectors, right? But the thing is, if you guys know moment arms, if you're like this is your back in a barbell dead or sorry, squat, barbell's here. That's your back in a deadlift. What do you think has more shear force to your spine, deadlift or squat? Deadlift. Yeah, because you're horizontal, so your spine erectors obviously have to work a lot more, right? It's also some moment arm stuff in there as well, but like just how the body's working to resist that force is a very, very different thing, right? But there's a lot of cool things here. I'm gonna pause here before actually gonna go on some other things. You have any questions so far, guys? Some movement takeaways that I actually didn't pop into this slide that I want to talk about quickly here. And this might be something you guys can take away. So let's dig into this a little bit, okay? Mid back versus lat training. Mid back is scapular, okay? So everybody put their arm out like this for me and just protract. Try to push your shoulders. Yeah, there you go, Mike. Now, without moving your elbows, if anything, flex your triceps. And without moving your elbows, retract your scapula. Okay, anybody struggle with that? It's pretty good across the board. Okay, that's your secret to training mid back. If you want to Google after this slide, go into type in again traps or rhomboid insertion origin. And what you'll find is the insertion is not on the arm, it's on the scapula. Okay, if it's on the scapula, then what does it matter about our arm? And the answer is it really doesn't. Okay, but the shoulder and the stability of the shoulder, definitely, it's all part of it. It works with the scapula, okay? And the thoracic spine works with scapula. Scap thoracic, that whole joint system right there, it's a working system, okay? But it's an important distinction because when we're working traps, I'm not sure who was talking about. Was it, sorry, buddy, I forgot your name. I should have been paying attention a little more. Shaw's, was it,
Mike, yes.
Mike, yeah, Mike. I thought it was Mike. Okay, good. So you're talking about lat training. So lat training, if you guys actually want to do this one more time, push your shoulder blade out. When you're pushing your shoulder blade out into your serratus, try to push out, almost like you're trying to throw a punch and overextend. Throw a punch and overextend, right? That's your serratus you're feeling in there. Now do this, externally rotate. Yep, and then put your hand underneath your elbow and then push down into your hand. There's your lat. Okay? That's it. Okay, push, overextend, push down. So that's that. It's there. It's not here, right? Because if we actually do that, if you guys do that cue, we push down and we flare our lat. Can you guys reach over and grab your lat? And can you tell it's tense? Can you do that? If you can feel it's tense, I want you to keep it tense, and then I want you to retract and tell me what happens to your lat.
Just shuts off.
Shuts off,
Yeah.
gone, right? Your lat's like, goodbye. Look, I've left the equation, right? So again, position in this case really does matter. But how could we maybe modify a motion to help you get into a position that maybe helps that lat work a little better, right? Not just like trying to drive a cable down if it doesn't want to go down. Like sure, like a straight arm pullover might help. A one arm lat row might help. But the truth is just getting your body into a position like everybody has different arm angles. You ever seen guys with like really long torsos, really short arms, stuff like that? Like these people need different things. Some people have like, if you ever met Ben in person, Ben has a very upright chest. Like his sternal angle is very different than mine. Mine's up, but not like that. Then some people have it like that, right? Guys like that, they'll always complain about their upper chest growing, right? These are certain things that they need to go into because they're doing positions that they think are upper chest. Like they'll be like, incline press is upper chest, right? I'm like, no, for you do this shoulder press, right? They need to just do like a decline press and they're going to be in the pec better, right? So again, we're not in pec training, but like this kind of stuff matters so we can get better with learning how to position ourselves for the muscle we're working, right? So takeaways there, guys, is again, like scap, that movement is that's rhomboids and traps and facilitating that first. is going to be a massive improvement for just increasing your mid back training. So if you're doing mid back training, your scapula does not come all the way back, then you're still biasing your lats somehow, and that's a really important distinction to make, okay? Then conversely, before I actually switch patients, conversely, if you are trying to train your lats and your scapula is retracting, what did you learn?
Switches off.
Switches off, right? Okay, increasing your workout efficacy. So pick exercises that fit your body, kind of went over that right there. Pick exercises that allow you to get better at working the muscle. And this is, I'm going to pause here before I go on to the next one, because this is really important and people skip over this all the time. Picking exercises that allow you to get better versus just trying to skip in. When we first started this slide, I was saying, if you looked at that last category, remember I was saying that, like the last category of exercises, everybody starts there and nobody pays attention to the stuff in the beginning. Yeah, like a great example would be like a chest supported row versus bent over barbell row. If you guys spend any time online, everybody's always picking on bent over barbell rows right now. It's because they're all stupid. That's the truth. Because like, there's no anybody ever says anything that this is the way it is. You know that they're kind of bought into some kind of dogmatic thoughts that, or they're just parroting information, right? Because really, anything with the justification, if it's well thought out, has a purpose, right? And so, in a great example is like, yeah, well, why would we train a bent over barbell row? Well, because you're trying to train spinal stability. And then all these muscles, look at that, their origin's the spine. So if you can get the spine more stable, you can transmit more force through the working muscle, right? It makes sense now. But the whole point with the bent over barbell row is that we're trying to train something so that, right? It's the so that. So if you guys can almost like mix or combine a list of exercises in your mind that you have a so that, right? What that means is like we're training a bent over barbell row so that we can train stability, so that you can upregulate retraction or recruitment. Another one would be we're training a pull up so that we can train glenohumeral depression so that we can activate the lat better, right? We're training, and then you go through these different positions, right? Because if every, again, once more, if everything is a nail, then we just become a hammer, right? Everything is just this thing that we're just turning into a bunch of. Here you go, buddy. Sorry, my dog just came in my room. Everything basically turns into we're just going to do what we do best, which is turn into a bunch of meatheads. Don't get me wrong, I love being a meathead, but there's not an answer for that all the time, because if that was the case, just get yourself into a leg press or get yourself into a one arm dumbbell or sorry, a machine row and just pump away. But that's not always going to help. Right? So, the last one there is understand exercise intention, eliminate exercise redundancy, a sagittal versus frontal plane row. And I gave you some examples here. So example would be like close seated row versus wide lat pull down and how they're different. Seated row versus low machine row, bent over barbell row versus single arm dumbbell row. People might think these are redundant or they might not think they're redundant, but there's an intention behind them. Does redundancy, is that something you guys are aware of? Do you understand how that works with back training? Can you guys actually give me an example of like two exercises that would be redundant in back training? Rob, go for it. Take a stab.
A cheat, and I think you almost said it earlier, like a sagittal pull down, and then something like a close grip machine row.
You got it, man. Yeah. So like that would be two exercises that you just don't need to repeat, right? Okay. Mike, what about anything else in your back training? It would be redundant.
You could say pull-ups and pull-downs in a way.
Yeah, exactly. If you do them back to back, for sure. Like, if there's no point, unless your coach, for example, is not trying to grow your muscles, right? And that's when the nuance needs to be talked about, which is why I'm trying to tell you guys right now so you can have the conversation. Because once we know, then we have an intention to have a conversation. I'm just going to close the door. One second. Sorry about that. So, what that means is like, if your coach is trying to teach you how to depress, right? So you can pull through and how to orient your body on that hanging pull-up bar. Then it's like, yeah, that can be infinitely beneficial, right? However, it's going to make you more tired, which is going to make your lat pull downs next less beneficial, right? But if the intention is to teach, cool. I've made a bunch of decisions based on intention alone. I've made clients do 20, 30, 40 sets of leg extensions just because they needed to have a day of suck. And that was my intention. And it's like, yeah, it worked. they learned what a crappy workout was. It's like I succeeded, right? But at the same time, it's like, was that optimal? No, not in any way, right? But then same time, it's like, if you did it, if your person's like, no, lat pull downs and then pull ups, it's gonna work two different. No, it's the same muscles, right? It's like doing a hack squat into a pendulum squat. Same muscles, right? You're doing the same thing twice. Okay. So redundancy is a big issue with this a hamstring hyperextension or a hyperextension, then doing a deadlift, right? If you're doing this two the same thing, again, it becomes redundant. So yeah. I got some pictures here of a couple of my clients, myself as well. I wanted to show you guys here that have to do with like, can you guys see this even when I come over and talk to you? So on the very, very bottom left there is, you guys see that right here? Because I can see you. Do you guys still see the sheet? Yeah. So on the bottom left is VAM. I think it's VAM sheet. And then in the middle is my old client, Jimmy. And then the top right, the combination is me from before. And then towards the end of my cut. And like, just literally, man, like from the understanding of this kind of stuff, you can create some really cool transformations. Like none of this stuff has to do with like any drugs. None of this stuff has to do with anything fancy. In fact, my own back training, I barely do. Nobody wants to hear this because this isn't a sexy answer, but I barely do like four or five working sets a day. There's not many working sets there. Because once you learn how to be efficient, what you'll notice in your own training, I'm sure you're already noticing this, is that you start actually losing the ability to keep up with yourself. Have you noticed that? As you get better, you can't keep the same performance through the set, through the workout. You start noticing performance goes down as you train longer, right? You can't keep up with yourself. Yeah, and so if you're doing that, you're losing recruitment. So what you want to start doing is leveraging frequency to increase results, right? So if you look at this, like there's some really cool things that I'll kind of like stop here and I'll let you kind of guys pick my brain about this kind of stuff, because what I really want to do, now that we went over the science, we can talk about some things and maybe you guys go over differently, or like again, I think it was Mike talking about his lat earlier, and just things like that that we can debunk or start talking about that can help you with your back training more and more. So, what are you guys' thoughts first off? Did anything, first off, what was that useful? Was that helpful?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, good. Thumbs up. Okay. So, my things I want you guys to take away with back training is that it all comes down to stability. And this, just so you know, this isn't just back training. We're just talking we're viewing training with through the back right now, right? But this is the same thing with quads. This is the same thing with any muscle. Like everybody wants to grow their pecs. Okay, you got to look at the shoulder. That's how it works, because guess where the pec attaches, right? So in any muscle, when you're looking at something like that, we got to figure out how to get better at it, right? So when we're trying to, debunk the myths around limitations, it's just, yeah, getting into that more. And I would like you guys to know, going tomorrow, if you're training back for the next back session, it's like, first off, pay attention to your stability at the origin, right? So a good framework you can use with every single exercise is, what muscle am I trying to train? What's the muscle's function, right? And then how do I know I'm doing it correctly? And I bet you're gonna find your answer within those three questions. Okay, so a lat pull down sounds so silly, right? But like, what muscle are you trying to work? You should all nod along and say lat. Okay, good. You figured that part out. Awesome. So what's the muscle's function? And then people are like, and they usually stop there because they don't know. Right, cool. Because it's not just the exercise, right? Because a lot of people do lat pull downs with their forearms, right? Who here is guilty as charged? Like their forearms burn. Yeah, right. Me too. Like 100%. Forearms burn after a lat pull down. Right. The reason why is because we're pulling, this joint is closing first. So it turns into this, right? And this joint's still open, but we're pulling like this. And see how there's no movement here? It's not this. It's not that. See what I'm saying? There's a different intention behind it, right? So then it's like, well, then what is the lat's function, right? Glenohumeral depression. What does that mean to you? Shoulder go down, right? Shoulder go down. Just drive shoulder down. Hand, don't care. If anything, be really light on hands. That's a cool cue you guys can take into your training going forward. Be really light on your hands, okay? Relax as much as possible. Certain things that have helped me is just like understanding pressure with your hands, even. It's like when you're pulling in like a frontal pull, it's like something here, like a lat pull down with a bar. Try to pull with your index finger. On a sagittal pull, try to pull with your pinky, right? These little things can help you, because if you're pulling with your pinky, you're going to stay externally rotated. If you're doing like a lat pull down like this, and you pull with your pinky, you're going to stay externally rotated, right? If you're pulling with your index finger, you do this. right? Does that make sense? Because you're going to leverage into that pressure there, right? So that's the first thing, guys. Is there any questions about that? Okay. Second thing is mid-back training versus lats, right? Would be making sure you know the distinction between glenohumeral motor depression versus scapular retraction. Okay. Does that one resonate with you guys? Okay, so what I want you guys to all commit to is when you're doing a mid-back exercise, start initiate with retraction. Okay. Every single like a T-bar row, pretty much like the bro's motion of choice overhand. It's here, retract, pull. Retract, pull. Like it's a gliding motion, retraction. That arm should not move until you finish the retraction. Okay. Okay, and then again, look at redundancy. So how do we know if we're being redundant? How do we know how much volume is the correct amount of volume? How do we know if anything in this whole list of different performance markers is valuable? Do you guys want to take a stab at how do we know if volume is important or if it's too much volume? Does anybody want to take a stab at that? Anyone just talk about it? Go for it. Okay, so if you're looking at what, how do we know if we're making progress? It's a rhetorical question. Because you're tracking progress, right? Like you're seeing progress in the gym, like you're seeing weights go up, right? So if you're doing tons of volume and the weights aren't going up, what does it tell you? Right? It's not working. So like then what's the problem, right? It's a stimulus issue, right? Or it's a recovery issue, maybe. So if it's a recovery issue, then what's the answer? Dial back volume, right? Make sense? If it's a stimulus issue, then you got to look at what you're actually doing and see if performance is an issue, okay? When it's too much, what ends up happening is fatigue accumulates. When fatigue goes up, you can't recruit motor units to actually tap in to get progress, which is why not a long scenario, I'll say yes. After like a week off, you always come back stronger, right? There's a reason why. It's because fatigue goes away and you come back stronger. So, and then we're all looking for that too. We're all literally looking for progress in that sense of like coming back stronger, but yet we get it and we're like, oh no, it can't be that. It's like, what are you talking about? That's actually the thing we're all looking for is progress. And we get it. And then we're like, no, not like that. It's really weird. So, but right? It's weird, isn't it? Like everybody wants that. And then it happens. Then they're like, no, not like that. So, but it's true. So when we're trying to get that kind of progress, it's like, okay, so that shows you then that's the optimal amount of volume. I had this conversation with a friend of mine. We were talking about like progress, and he was like, can you get more progress? And I was like, I'm not sure if you can get more. I don't even know what that means. What does more progress mean? That means like, imagine that you're Bob Ross and you have like a paint swatch in your hand. And then somebody says, can you make red? Right? And then he gets his colors and he starts making red out of like the bunch of different colors. And then the person comes over and he's like, no, I want more red. And he's like, what? That is red. I've made red for you. And then what he does is he tries to make more red and then it comes out like kind of like orange. He's like, I screwed it up. And that's what we all do. We're like, I'm making progress, right? We're seeing progress. Why? Weights are going up. You're feeling good. And then we're like, I can see more progress. And then what we do is we add in more sets. We try to do more exercise. And then what ends up happening? You end up having joint pain. You end up like seeing progress stall again. And it's true. You actually will see like reps and stuff like that fall off. So some things like once we understand the exercise execution, understand the stability, all this kind of stuff, then what you guys are concerned with is getting progress, right? So my suggestions are just track it and pay attention to it because I really do believe, and you guys will be amazed that once you understand how simple it is, and again, the key point being that really the first part of this whole conversation is most important. Nobody trains stability. And that, in my opinion, is absolutely the thing that matters because nobody trains it, right? Then progress really does happen fast and it will happen weekly. Like you'll literally be repping things like, wow, I'm stronger. Wow, I'm stronger. Wow, I'm stronger. And how do you know? Well, because you're tracking it, right? And you're seeing a rep, but it's not weight every single week because it's silly. If you were to put a pound on every single lift in every single week, that's 52 pounds a year. You're not going to make that kind of progress. That's not what we're looking at. What we're looking at is like, can you do an extra rep? Are you feeling more stable? Are you feeling like, are you feeling better? Is it maybe sometimes it's weight. Maybe, right? But more often than not, it's like confidence, competence, stuff like that. Okay. So, again, takeaways, train stability, right? Train range of motion, right? Pick exercises that are really effective and make sure that you're training them intentionally and then watch them. And then, yeah, guys, just track your progress, okay? Any questions about on that? Everybody, kind of pop off. Do me a favor because I've been talking a lot. Apparently, I've found a way to talk for 55 minutes. If you can, do me a favor, pop off, unmute yourself, and tell me one thing you took away from this.
Stability is key, man. Got to just make it happen.
Awesome. Love it. Next
Thanks.
person. You can't talk about stability. What's my Mike already took it.
I was thinking about the intent of I've got some lats program. I've got some heaves, like chin-ups programmed at the moment. I'm not quite sure why. So I might go back to Andrew and go, what am I doing there? Is that for my lats? Are we building form? Are we, because I feel with that one, I'm like, hey, I don't know if my form's right or why am I doing this? So I might go back and clarify the intent of that exercise in my back session.
Yeah, and I love it. And I'm gonna pop in here for one second. I know I want to hear you guys talk, but there's really cool things here. Once you understand this is what I'm hoping happens from this. You guys will go film your exercises and you'll view some things, okay? And you'll see things and you'll be like, it's almost like Matrix. You become Neo and you start seeing numbers and you're like, oh, I see it now. And what you'll notice is your movements have confidence or what's the word? What's the word I'm forgetting? It starts with a C. Anyways, you're gonna have things that are compensations. Your movements have compensations. Sorry about that. So meaning like when you're doing like a lat pull down, watch people's lower backs. They pull and they go like that. Like they pull and it turns into that. Like they're moving through their spine. Watch people in the gym. You'll see it everywhere. Right? Again, where does the lat insert? Or sorry, where does it originate? Spine. Right? Then they're pulling and they're going into an anterior pelvic tilt and they're hyperextending their lumbar spine. So what does that tell you is wrong with the origin of the lat? Not stable. Shouldn't move. That should not move, right? Okay. Like when we do that in a deadlift, we get hurt. We do it in a lat pull down, we just don't get any progress. Okay. So like that could be the reason why. Like that might be why Andrew has you doing that. It's to train certain positions around other ones, right? Other Mike.
I've got a quick question though, sorry.
Yeah,
If
go for it.
you find yourself doing that, is it something that you should just drop the weight on and really go back to correcting the movement?
Like, I think that the better answer would be to make sure that you understand the difference between dropping weight to actually focus on form if you have the competency or change exercises, right? Because if we drop weight, we drop stimulus. That is true. However, if you're doing the exercise wrong in the first place, you're not getting the stimulus no matter what weight you're doing, right? So it's probably just a better thing is to change exercises unless you actually need to remember the cue. In that case, sometimes it is the answer, right? Like I've had some people just like learn, like they need to breathe. And then what happens? Immediately they do get better, right? Because it's like you're not breathing. Like the diaphragm and how it inserts and how it's complexities in that area, it's pretty crucial, right? To spinal alignment integrity. So if we have that crucial element, like, and then we're missing that, then yeah, it's going to be affected. So should you drop your weight? Maybe if you can't focus on it, right? That could be a thing. But otherwise, it's in my experience, it's usually more correlated to the fact that the person's not ready yet, which is why we don't regress load, we regress position.
Yeah,
Okay.
I found, as you know, for me, the cue of the coughing, keeping
Yeah.
that low chest tight was huge for
Huge.
my stability.
100%. Absolutely, man. Anybody else?
Yeah, the whole thing you were saying about retracting your scapula for like moving your scapula back and then doing your pull, right?
Yeah. It's a huge one, man. And understand that too, because a lot of people, when you guys go to the gym, watch them train lats. And what you'll notice is that first of all, they all talk about how they have bad lats. It's all this genetic crap. It's like, it's bullshit. It's that you don't know how to train your lats. That's all it is, right? Because what you see is you see them pull and the scapula comes right back. It's like you're training your mid back. Everything for them is a mid back motion. Every single thing they've found a way. Even like, you ever seen the girls do like the straight arm pullover? And it's this. Right? It's always that. So what are they doing? They're driving their elbows into the back pockets. Like they're trying to pull in, and then they're recruiting their scapula, where it should be like, it shouldn't be that. It should be like that, right? We're trying to drive down or fire that lat right there, try to push it down into its pocket, and it completely changes the game. You're going to see it everywhere. The second you go back to the gym, you're like, oh my God. Phil, what about you? I think you came on a little late, so you might not have the.
Yeah, it did come on a little late. Sorry about that. Meeting that ran over. But anyway, I've never heard stability training kind of explained like that before. I mean, I used to compete in powerlifting back in the day, and so we would train for stability. with a squat, the deadlift, you know, kind of thing, and not really with a bench, but you know, we did it as, you know, one, it was injury prevention. Two, if you're strong without the equipment, you're going to be really strong when you start wearing it, you know, kind of thing. And they kept me injury free for a long time, but
Absolutely.
I've just never thought about it for like, you know, some things, you know.
Yeah, and people don't, because you're right. I think that stability is usually viewed in terms of like strength training.
Yeah.
But when you realize the only difference between strength training and hypertrophy training is honestly just a rep range, and then it's usually the sport, rep range and sport, meaning that strength training is primarily done on three lifts, right? Squat, bench, dead.
Yeah, it's a completely different mindset. Because,
Yeah.
you know, in like powerlifting, you're lifting to lift more weight. Bodybuilding, you're lifting to sculpt your body in one way, shape, or form, kind of.
Yeah,
So different
exactly, man.
intentions, right?
Yeah, but the stability, that's a big takeaway, because a lot of people, again, if you want to follow, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. I'll pop it in the chat later. Yeah, but if we're looking at like injury prevent, there's no injury prevention, but like injury mitigation, then you're trying to get more stable, right? Because
Yeah.
stability is key, because strong things don't break. That's the way it works. Strong things don't break. Weak things break. So if we're trying to get more stable, you can really push that as far as possible. And then it takes the more nuanced eye to look at positions with as much discernment as possible and say, like, okay, so yeah, this person might have perceptibly had strong quads, but then he broke, he tore his quads. Why do you think he has strong? Well, he had a strong squat. I'm like, yeah, but was he using his quads, or is he using his low back and his glutes in his squat? And you're like, oh crap, yeah.
Right.
Right? And then that's the reason why he probably broke his quads.
Yeah.
It's probably to do with that. Yeah, good insight, man. That's awesome. Okay, guys, there is a link. If you guys can all copy that link and just take 2 seconds for me, I'd really appreciate it if you can just kind of fill that out. I don't think it takes any longer than 2 minutes, guys. Just as like a little commentary about how you felt that tonight's call was. And honestly, man, anybody in here, if you're on Instagram, I'm going to type in my handle there. That's my Instagram account. If you want to follow me on there, I'm always talking about this kind of stuff. I'm always going over this, so that I can get my clients more results, or just have conversations so people can see me doing as well. I'm always working out and posting my workouts. So yeah, anything you guys can do, or any help you need, rather, just let me know. Okay, I'm always here. And pop some videos for us to kind of look at for you. Send them into the group chat or send them to your coach. Hopefully this conversation was a good way to look at exercise execution, so you can kind of take things further. Cool, guys.
We chatted, it was
Awesome.
great.
Thank you.
Have a good night, okay?
You too. Thank you.
Bye.